So glad to have you on this Tuesday drive. You are listening to WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. Where don't look now, but we are 15 days away from the Carolina Panthers opening up training camp in Spartanburg. 2 weeks. That's it. So given that football isn't that far away, we're long overdue for a check-in on Bryce Young. Because even though the Panthers have technically been off for nearly a month now, it's pretty clear that Bryce has continued to put that work in, and he's making some strides. Since OTAs wrapped up, all the league chatter out there regarding the Panthers has reached a consensus on Bryce. And the consensus is this. Bryce is going to start day one. There's no doubt about it. There won't be a Frank Reich, Matt Rule-like deflection where Andy Dalton's getting snaps when everybody knows that Bryce is going to be starting day one, a la a year ago when they brought in Baker Mayfield, yet they wanted, out of respect to Sam Darnold, give him all those snaps, even though we all kind of knew what the deal was going to be. That's not going to happen with Frank Reich. And this shouldn't really surprise you. Wait, Carolina is going to trade up to the number one pick? And they intend to actually play the guy? Crazy, I know. But the way that Bryce has picked things up has really raised some eyebrows. Listen to Kevin Clark from The Ringer talk about just this on the Ryan Russillo podcast.
His mental aptitude has been as advertised. Okay, fine. He's a mental savant. He's a savant. That's it. He's processing so much, and he's already got the install down. It's been a hard install. That's what we know about Thomas Brown's offense. And guess what? It's just not a problem. They're taking everything and throwing it at Bryce Young, and he's just eating it all up because he's a savant.
Savant. Put that into the same lexicon as student of the game. I probably take savant over student of the game.
I think it's better.
Would you rather be called a genius or a savant?
Definitely a savant. It's more sophisticated. Oh, more refined.
Yes. Pinky finger up.
100%.
Where's my cup here? Pinky finger up. Hello there. I'm a savant. In the last few days, Bryce Young's also gathered his receivers together to work out. They were in Dallas at SMU. Why? Because apparently the quarterback's coach or the trainer they were working with is based out of there. And the guys that were gathered, among them, Adam Thielen, Terrace Marshall Jr., LaVisca Chenault, even former App State running back Cameron Peoples was there. You know who wasn't there, though? Andy Dalton. Because at this point, Bryce Young gets it. He gets it. It's his team. And he's acting like it. This is my team now. These are my wide receivers. Hey, let's get together. Even though this is not NFL sanctioned and technically we're off, let's get some throws in. Run some routes. Adam Thielen, Terrace Marshall, LaVisca Chenault. And that's exactly what he did. He's doing all of the right things. All the things you want a franchise quarterback to do. Training camp begins in 15 days. Wow, that's it. 2 weeks. Football's that close. In fact, 2 weeks from today, we're going to be broadcasting from ACC Football Media Days. A three-day event now where we'll be talking to all the coaches. So if you're one of those summer people who hasn't really gotten the full summer experience yet, I hate to be that guy and say, football's coming. Football's close, or at least closer than you might think. On Twitter, at WSJS Radio, if you want in, 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Will Dalton, the executive producer of this show, coming over to the crib tonight, to the Graham household.
Yep, bachelorette time. Getting the big screen.
Not Major League Baseball time?
100% not.
So, the All-Star game, if you had your choice, what goes on that screen?
It's bachelorette. We need all of our efforts to get Braden out of here tonight.
Yeah.
It's got to go. He's got
to
go.
Charity needs to figure that out herself. Yep. She hasn't quite discovered that yet. But let's talk about, rather than talk about Braden and the Bachelorette, let's actually talk about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game for a minute. Because this feels like the year it's finally going to happen. Tonight has all the makings for something to happen that we haven't seen happen in what feels like forever. I'm, of course, talking about the National League winning an All-Star game. Tonight, it feels like the night. They have not won, they being the National League, since 2012. You want to know how long that is? You might just say, oh, 11 years, Josh, cool. I couldn't do that math that quickly. I went to East Carolina. We covered this, okay? But in baseball terms, Chipper Jones played in that game. Derek Jeter played in that game. Josh Hamilton played in that game. Jonathan Papelbon played. You just look at these guys. There are probably some Nickelbacks. How about this? Dan Uggla played in that game.
Look at this photograph.
Used him in my immaculate grid today. Really helped me. The AL is hurting a bit. They're going to be missing four players, including three potential starters. You have the obvious ones, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, who are not, or pardon me, Mike Trout, the other noteworthy Angel. Don't want to scare anybody. Shohei, he is going to play. Biggest star in baseball. But Aaron Judge and Mike Trout are not. And neither is Shane McClanahan, who, if he wasn't hurt, might be starting this game over Garrett Cole. Jordan Alvarez from Houston, he's not playing either. Meanwhile, as far as I can see, the only guy who would be playing in the All-Star game from the National League that is unable to due to injury is Clayton Kershaw. And that's not a guy who's going to start the game anyway. The National League has an opportunity tonight. I think they capitalize on it because they have the most dominant team in the sport this year, too, in the Atlanta Braves. Eight guys from the Braves are playing tonight. Eight guys are in Seattle, including the entire Braves infield. So, yes, tonight is the night for the National League. It hasn't happened since 2012. But tonight, it feels like they are due.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
When our next guest was inducted into the Panthers Hall of Honor, he quoted an Avett Brothers lyric during his speech, which, frankly, should put him into Canton in my book. So since I saw the Avetts a couple of months back, our streaming audience can see I'm rocking a Merlefest hat since the Avetts performed there, and that was a fantastic evening out up on North Wilkesboro at Wilkes Community College. The great Jordan Gross is now with us on WSJS. A day after we learned a couple of your teammates, Jordan, will be joining you in the Panthers Hall of Honor. So let's go back to the summer of 2003. You're a rookie offensive tackle taken in the first round that, had the lineup against somebody who was pretty good. How long did it take lining up against Julius Peppers, who at that point was the reigning defensive rookie of the year, to realize this guy's a little different?
It took about 3 seconds, and that's how long it took for him to knock me onto my butt for the first time. So it was definitely a learning experience, putting on pads against Julius Peppers, and something that I will never forget, that first training camp. And quite honestly, it was every training camp, just the biggest challenge of my life physically for that career was blocking him for 7 years. So obviously, he's more than deserving to be in the Panthers Hall of Honor. He'll be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in no time, and just an awesome guy on top of that. So really cool. But, really cool for him.
But did you have to tell yourself back then, 20 years ago, Jordan, that all the guys you're going to be facing in the league are not quite like this person? Did it discourage you at all when you had to line up with him, thinking, as somebody who hasn't experienced NFL football yet, this might be what every team has?
Well, my teammates at that time, some of the older linemen, my coach told me that he's not, he's the outlier. He's not normal. So that made me feel a little bit more at ease. But I did recognize sometimes throughout that first season there were guys that were a step or two below Julius Peppers. And when I had to go against Michael Strahan or Simeon Rice or Kevin Carter, Javon Kearse, a bunch of, great pass rushers in their own right, it definitely helped having Pep somebody I could battle with every day. So really cool time for him.
Jordan Gross is with us here on WSGS. Do you find that you have better firsthand stories of Peppers or stories that are better that were told secondhand? Because there is a Paul Bunyan element to him dating back to his Carolina days or even back to Nash County right before the internet started to take hold.
Yeah, he is a pretty quiet dude, especially when he was younger. We didn't talk, like, hardly at all. I mean, literally, like, didn't talk to each other. And not because we didn't like each other. He just, one of the most quiet people I've ever met in my entire life. So we'd kind of stand there waiting for one-on-ones or something to go against each other. And if I would, Pep was the best professional in the world as far as body control and how he could, he could go full speed until the very last millisecond and let up. So, for example, if I was, you know, we were doing a pass rush in team or something, and I started to tip over or he got me off balance, he'd literally stop and, like, hold me up like I'm a little kid about to fall into the swimming pool, you know? And just, like, he was so good at staying up. He never would touch the quarterback. He never would do it. He would go full speed against me until the very last second, and when I was able to stay in front of him and block him clean in a one-on-one or whatever happened, it was like I'd won the World Series, you know. It was pretty incredible. But my stories with him all revolve around physical feats that he had performed in front of me or on the team, you know, on the field when we were on the same team, that are just unmatched. There's really not a lot of good stories for off the field stuff, because he was just always a quiet observer.
Are those physical feats most impressive the ones that we also saw on the field, like the Atlanta play or the Denver near pick six? I mean, or is it something you saw at practice that maybe we haven't seen?
Yeah, there's no athlete that I've seen still that's as big as him and as long as him, meaning like arms, legs, you can cover so much space. But then also his change of direction and burst was just phenomenal. I mean, it's exemplified by the fact that he played basketball at North Carolina, which is, especially when he was there, it was like the mecca of college basketball. So he would, when we do our one-on-one, so in training camp and during the season, you do one-on-one pass rush, which means I'm blocking and you're trying to rush to get to where the quarterback would be standing in a game. And it's a big deal. Everybody's watching, and there's everything, you know, a lot on the line and all that. Well, Pep would line up nice and wide where, like, I couldn't reach out and touch him. So what that forces me to do is I got to go back to cut him off. I got to go straight back to cut him off for his line, you know, pass to get to the quarterback. Well, he'd sprint hard for two steps, boom, boom, which would make me, you know, have to fly backward fast. And then he'd start doing these jukes like Allen Iverson, like getting ready to do a crossover, and you're not sure which way he's going to go, right? Like, boom, 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 he'd start chopping his feet. And what would happen to me as a young guy is that would just force me to, like, kind of get tall as I'm going, oh, God, what's he doing, right? And he's 290 pounds. This is happening in front of me. And then he'd either stick his outside foot in the ground and cut and rip underneath and really flat and go that way, or he'd go around the outside, or the worst option was he'd do that stutter, and they call it a stutter bull rush, and then he'd just take two hands and just jam them right in my chest. And you can imagine what would happen sometimes. So that movement, there's guys that were fast, Von Miller, or, you know, you got like the young guys now like Bosa's, but they're nowhere near as big as him. And so there was really no advantage that you could take against that guy.
Jordan Gross is with us here. We need to get to Musa Muhammad as well, who you played with. After talking to our mutual friend Darren Gant yesterday, I thought of the movie Unusual Suspects, which had that famous line, "The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist." And that's because Darren said, perhaps the greatest testament to Steve Smith's personality was that he was so eccentric, he made Musa Muhammad seem like a quiet guy. What's your favorite Moose story?
Oh, man, my favorite Moose story. That's tough. I can't tell you an exact time this happened. It happened numerous times in different versions of the same story. But we had a play. You know, Moose is well known for catching the ball, running routes, making plays, longest touchdown reception in Super Bowl history, all that stuff, right? That's all great. But What I love about Mohsin Mohamed is he took a ton of pride in blocking in the run game. So, especially in 03 and then, you know, the years after, but when we would run a play called Ted Crack Special, which was a toss play to Steven Davis or Deshaun Foster, whoever the case may be. Well, the tight end would block down, and then I would pull out in space. There's a famous Deshaun Foster run in the playoff game in 03 against the Eagles where he scores a touchdown. I'm in front. I cut block in front of him on pull, that same thing. Well, what also is happening out there at the same time is Mohsin Mohamed blocking the corner or the safety, whatever the case may be. Well, when we call Ted Crack Special, I always lined up in the huddle next to Moose. Every time we called Ted Crack Special to my side, he would always look at me with a big old smile and, like, dab me up, like, let's do this, right? So he just took so much pride in, like, I'm one of you guys, I'm blocking, I'm going to knock somebody down. And we even got to be where he'd go like he was blocking the corner, and then he'd release at the last second and go, you know, ear hole to safety, and that would set the corner up for me to come right behind and just clean him up. So I just had so much respect for Moose and had so much fun with him run blocking on those toss plays because he loved it as much as we did.
I take it that's abnormal that a wide receiver would be that jacked to block.
Steve would just he'd lock up with one guy and run him all the way into the water cooler on the other sideline and then get in a fight and we'd have to break it up. Different mentality, but still uniquely memorable.
Yeah, Jordan Gross, he's with us here on WSJS. So getting to the current team real quick, we are 15 days away from training camp, and it feels like consensus ever since OTAs that the Panthers are going to start Bryce Young right away. Guys in that building have gushed behind the scenes to me about how he's picked up a pretty sophisticated offense almost in a snap right away as a rookie. But let me bring the offensive line into this. How much do you think the quality of the Panthers' line with all five starters returning affects Frank Reich's comfort level in playing a quarterback early on?
Absolutely huge. It's very similar to when we drafted Cam in 11, right? And we had an O-line with some veteran guys, with some young talent who had already been in place. Having Ryan Khalil at the center when Cam was drafted, Ryan was able to do a ton of the protection calls and the re-IDing of linebackers, which way we're sliding. Ryan took a ton of that off Cam's plate. I would have to imagine that Bozeman and Corbett and those guys are going to be able to do the same thing. So it's astronomically valuable to have a veteran O-line in front of a young quarterback because, number one, they should do a better job of protecting him, but number two is just he won't have to direct them. They'll be able to do that, take a lot off his shoulders, and then just the confidence that comes from all that. It's going to be exciting to watch.
Next time we catch up with you, we're talking 3A Idaho football. How's that sound?
Oh, we got a big matchup coming up. We're playing it on the Smurf turf at Boise State, second game of the year. So that's a big deal out here, you know. It might be on ESPN. They're still finalizing the TV rights, you know.
Jordan Gross, thanks for the time, buddy. It's good to hear your voice.
You too. Talk soon.
This is it. Ready?
All right, hold on.
All right, do it.
All right, listen up.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
One of the functions of this radio show is to push against the SEC hype machine that can get a little out of control sometimes. Now, nobody's going to suggest that there is a better football conference than the Southeastern Conference. They've certainly earned that. But we will push back when that hype machine gets a bit out of control saying, SEC basketball is better than ACC basketball. Just look at how many teams we get into the tournament. And then, despite the fact they got three more teams in this year, and three more last year in that matter, none of them are playing in the Final Four, while the ACC has Miami there, and last year had Duke and North Carolina show up. Sometimes you just got to check the SEC hype machine, because today I was reminded of sitting in this chair, well, not specifically this chair, because today's day two of us broadcasting from Winston-Salem after being in Kernersville for 7 years doing
Kernersville
or our
you get what I'm saying. The studio was in Kernersville for 7 years. We were doing our show there for 4.5, nearly 5 years, until starting here off Providence Lane, day two of us being here today. I remember a few years ago when Jamie Newman transferred out of Wake to go play for Georgia. At some point during the summer, at about this time, there was just something flatly preposterous said on SEC radio waves or on the SEC network or one of these blogs that's out there. Pow! Might have been on a show. Somebody said, and then a bunch of other people agreed to it like thoughtless idiots, that Jamie Newman, this was the comparison that was made. You can Google it. You can find it. Jamie Newman is a combination of Cam Newton and Jalen Hurts. Paul! Jamie Newman. I covered both Jamie from Graham, North Carolina, by the way, one of my favorite cities in the state. I covered him at Wake, and I covered Cam Newton. And never once did I think watching Jamie Newman that those two players were similar. But that's the SEC hype machine. Which brings us to Joe Milton. Fire up the Rocky Top if we've got it. Joe Milton is Tennessee's quarterback. And there are stories out there saying, quote, he's the next Anthony Richardson. He can flick a ball better out of his hand than Peyton Manning did. This is the type of summer content that you get, courtesy of the SEC hype machine. Watch out. He's going to be a first-round pick.
Ask and you shall receive. Wish that
I was on now this makes me want to say good things about Big Orange. Big Orange and Joe Milton. I kind of feel bad about what we're doing now. You have to fire up the Asborn brothers and... all of the sudden I melt. Man.
Rocky Top, you'll always be home to love to me.
I'm in.
Woo!
Okay, now get that out of here. Get that out of here. I'm serious what I'm talking about here. Really what the problem is, it's not even Joe Milton's fault. Because again, he doesn't control the media. Right? He doesn't control what they say. He doesn't control the fans. He doesn't control all that. We understand that. The problem is, as good as the SEC's teams are, they don't have a lot of good quarterbacks. So when you go through the list, like 24/7 put out a list today, the top quarterbacks in the SEC, WD, and they're trying to tell us that Joe Milton is right there near the top. Devin Leary, former NC State quarterback who's now at Kentucky. Okay. They're trying to tell us about Spencer Rattler at South Carolina. Maybe Quentin Jefferson, the quarterback at Arkansas. That's the list. That's the list. How many ACC quarterbacks would you take before you take any of those quarterbacks I just named?
Well, obviously I'd take Drake May.
Yep.
Come on now.
Yep. And they would too. And they tried. And they tried to take Drake May.
And I'm not convinced who's...
Give me Riley Leonard at Duke over any of those quarterbacks.
Yeah, Riley Leonard.
Give me him. I heard some people actually speculating about him potentially being a draft pick. I thought he was really good. I would say Sam Hartman, but... Can we claim Notre Dame?
And by the way, put Brennan Armstrong in that conversation. Yeah, potentially. We'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay. Yeah, maybe.
We'll see.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'd take Cade Klubnik. Just because of how he was recruited. Jordan Travis, without a doubt. Jordan Travis is the number two quarterback on the board. If he was in the SEC, people would be comparing him to a combination of Cam Newton and Jesus Christ himself.
Paul!
No, but like, we don't have much sample size of greatness from Joe Milton. Like, all we have is the Orange Bowl blowout of Clemson last year and him throwing an actual orange 100 yards.
I mean, he's got a cannon.
Sure he does. But I guess there's the Anthony Richardson comp right there. You have a cannon, but well, you might throw it to Vanderbilt. couple of times.
Yeah, what's that game going to be this year? The new Vanderbilt game.
Does Tennessee play Vandy this year?
Let's see.
No reason. Just checking. Now, and the other thing is, he doesn't have a lot of talent around him. WD, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a Biletnikoff voter.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
And that means I focus a lot on receivers. Tennessee is losing Cedric Tillman and Jalen Hyatt, who are draft picks. And Hendon Hooker from the Triad, he's a special player. So the other thing with Joe Milton is, it's not just we don't have a lot of sample of excellence for him. We also just have a lot of sample of not so excellent from Joe Milton, because he's been around. He was at Michigan, didn't take over the reins there. Now he's at Tennessee. Okay, I'm not completely ruling the guy out. I'm just saying, we're not projecting he's going to be like a guy taken in the top five of the draft. That's what we're doing already. We're firing up that.
You want to take a guess who Tennessee's last regular season game is against?
The Doors.
Right there at Old Rocky
just
Top.
Just throwing that out
the
there.
The Doors are coming
that's
in.
Doors.
Oh, that's great.
Closing in on us. So, yeah, the hype machine, it's just a little much. It's just a little bit much. Hit that Rocky Top again. I just feel like this is all gone bad. I should have just fired up the Rocky Top. Yeah! Ha-ha! Ha-ha! Where's that Paul sound? We're going to make music here. Oh! I don't think these walls are soundproof here yet, by the way.
They weren't ready for it.
People are like looking in. What's happening? On The Drive with Josh Graham.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Being that I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan, I've been all in on Adley Rutschman, the player. That's what captivates my interest. But last night, it felt like the nation was introduced to Adley Rutschman, hitting on both sides of the plate. They fell in love with his family, the fact that his dad was throwing BP to him, and also falling in love with his sister, too, got a lot of attention. And during broadcast, I think we've evolved past the point where you can be red-blooded Americans in that type of way on the air. You still have corners of the internet. I think social media is still a function of that as well, where you can express that somebody, you know, stands out in that type of way, and you can go viral in that type of way. But you don't really see that on the broadcast anymore, which led me to the obvious place of Brent Musburger during a national title game ogling at AJ McCarron's girlfriend, who they panned over to, in a way that, even though this is only 10 or 11 years ago, it might as well be 40 years ago, given how far we've come in terms of, I guess it's progress, in terms of social sensibility on what's okay to say on air, how we regulate things socially. WD did not know about this clip. It's amazing to me that you didn't remember this, but let's go back to that.
Back into the game. Now, when you're a quarterback at Alabama, you see that lovely lady there. She does go to Auburn. I want to admit that. But she also Miss Alabama, and that's A.J. McCarron's girlfriend, okay? And right there on the right is Dee Dee Bonner. That's A.J.'s mom. Wow, I'm telling you, quarterbacks, you get all the good-looking women. What a beautiful woman.
Wow. A.J.'s doing some things right down in
Tuscaloosa. So if you're a youngster in Alabama, start getting the football out and throw it around the backyard with Pop.
Yeah, whoa. Oh, you guys seeing this? What down is it? Second down, what's the score?
Whoa.
Whoa. You guys seeing this?
Whoa.
It's amazing. That might as well be 30, 40 years ago.
Whoa.
Could you imagine? Like, he's sitting next to Herb Street. I hear Herb Street's voice. Could you imagine if Chris Fowler did that today?
Whoa.
No. Good old Brent, man. God bless him. Yes. Now, let's give away little Uzi Vert tickets. Let's give away tickets to go see the Eagles with Bob Seger in a segment that all that's required in order for you to win those tickets at 336-777-1600 is to deliver a hot fire take and Josh is out of his mind.
All aboard!
Josh is out of his mind.
Crazy fool.
Just telling stories.
He's out of his f***ing mind.
I'll give you an example as we take these calls at 777-1600. WD, it's still summer league season. A lot of eyes are on Victor Wembanyama, the most highly anticipated prospect since LeBron. Brandon Miller from the Hornets, a number two pick, outplayed him. Not by a lot, but did outplay him on Friday when they faced off head-to-head. A lot of people liked what they saw from Scoot Henderson before he got hurt. Those were the top three picks and seemed to be the top three guys in this draft. None of those three players will win NBA Rookie of the Year.
Josh is out of his mind.
Why? Chet Holmgren looks pretty good, and he's eligible for Rookie of the Year because he didn't play last year. Also, some other guys. How about a guy who played for John Calipari last year? Cason Wallace, looking really good for Oklahoma City. For Dallas, Derek Lively from Duke. Just a few names to throw out there that are not named Victor Wembanyama or Brandon Miller or Scoot Henderson that can win the award. So I'll go out on a limb and say none of the top three picks are going to win NBA Rookie of the Year. Okay, for concert tickets, we got Dave and Clemens. Dave, what do you have for me? Give me some hot fire.
Josh, I got two. I want to jump in on this opening segment you just did. Zach Wilson's mom is hotter than all the girls you've already mentioned.
Whoa! Dave is...
That was mine.
I'm not sure he is.
I don't know what Zach Wilson's mom looks like.
I'm trying to remember.
I remember she was a draft sensation. Like, let's put it this way. She was a lot better prospect, it seems, than Zach Wilson was in hindsight. What was your second take?
Bingo. I got a college sports take. Michael Penix Jr., the Washington Huskies, Michael Penix Jr. Yeah. is going to win Heisman. The Washington Huskies are going to be in the Final Four. Josh, they got the top wide receivers class in the nation. I know you know a little something about wide receivers. Keep your eye on Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, the top two prospects, wide receivers out west in the country. Josh, I love this Washington Huskies team. Expect big things, Heisman trophies. Maybe national championships from the Washington Huskies this year.
I don't know if Dave
is out of his mind.
That's a great take. Thank you for the call, Dave. Stay on hold so we can get your information and you can win your tickets. That is a hot take. So it is worthy. He gets the game for sure. However, I really like where his head's at. See, I've been doing my studying for the college football season in the last few weeks. Washington is a team I've had circled a couple of times, so... You might hear more about the Huskies on this show in a few weeks. And you're right. I am a Biletnikoff voter. Did you know that, WD?
Yeah, I've heard it.
Let's go to Joey in Thomasville. Why did you clear your throat into the microphone there?
I don't know.
That's a weird move.
It is.
Joey, tell me what you got.
All right, listen. This is a two-parter, okay?
Yeah.
In honor of baseball and the All-Star game. I don't know if you know this, but the second, the third, and the fourth batters are all Dodgers. We got Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and J.D. Martinez. They are going tonight to go back to back to back in the first inning for home runs, and they're going to propel the National League to a long, long overdue victory over the American League. And not only that, that will then propel. I know the area we live in, and I know everybody's flipping on the Braves, and I know they've got a great team, and I know they're playing great, but the Dodgers are going to turn it up. They're going to turn up the heat in the second half. They're going to take over. They're going to get the best record in baseball. And not only that, they are going to get revenge on the Houston Astros in the World Series and capture it in a four-game sweep.
Joey.
There you go.
There he goes. On fire. I love the calls today. Can I hang up on the call there? Yeah, I can.
Look at you.
Oh, shoot.
Wow, you just got rid of it. Joey, can you call back?
Joey.
This is what happens when you press buttons.
I'm the one pressing the buttons there. I didn't mean to hang up on you. Call WD back so
yes,
he
please.
Can give you tickets and such. That's my bad.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happens when you put technology in front of me here.
Yep.
I'm trying to figure out, as he was talking there, what type of odds I can get for not one, not two, but three consecutive home runs hit in a game tonight. Like J.C. Horn, I'd like to know what value I can get for something like that.
Cash up, man.
Yeah. Should I deliver this take? I've got one more. I don't know if this is going to mean anything to you. You know what? Screw it. We'll do it. Richard Curtis is a superior rom-com director to Nora Ephron and Nancy Myers, making Richard Curtis the superior rom-com director in film history.
Josh is out of his mind.
So I was putting it side by side today because I had way too much time on my hands during the summer. And I saw that this year is the 10-year anniversary of one of my favorite movies. It's a Richard Curtis movie called About Time. Rachel McAdams stars in this. Love Actually is one of Richard Curtis's. Bridget Jones' Diary, Notting Hill, Four Weddings and a Funeral. All are classics. Put that side by side with When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, and You've Got Married. Those are the three heavy hitters from Nora Ephron. I think I'm going to take Richard Curtis in that, and I don't think enough people bring that up. So there's my take there. WD, do you have something on the way out?
Oh, I do. I do. So mine's NFL related, and my take is I think Stetson Bennett is going to be the surprise of the NFL season.
What does that mean?
WD is out of his mind.
It means I think before this season is over, he's going to be the starter on the Rams.
Okay.
And he's actually going to have some pretty nice highlights to go along with that. Their defense is going to be terrible, so I don't expect them to do anything. But did you see the reports that apparently the Rams tried to trade Matthew Stafford during this offseason?
Yeah, I'm just saying that. I just need to know what that means. Like,
yeah.
It was a cliche of...
No, I get it. I get it.
He's going to burst on... Well, what's that mean?
Well, it means nobody's talking about him.
Yeah.
And nobody really talked about him through the draft process.
Sure.
I think he might be a surprise. I think he might be the starter before the season's over.
And that's been a segment we call...
Josh is out of his mind.
I need to know how many of those movies you've seen. I'm going to go through them really quickly again. About Time.
Well...
Love Actually.
Well.
Bridget Jones' Diary.
Well.
Notting Hill.
Well.
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Well.
When Harry Met Sally.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yes. Did we do that one?
That was a test. Yes. You've seen it. It was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. And Sleepless in Seattle, I don't think you've seen.
Well.
You've Got Mail.
Well,
that's incredible.
Is it?
You're 1 for 8 on these movies that I really love.
Sorry.
So perhaps we could pick one of those for you to watch next week.
Josh Graham loves to talk sports. He also loves to take herbal body baths to keep his skin supple and youthful looking. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
There are some topics on this show we explore that are hot button issues. They can lead to some emotional responses. If you're going to call in during this segment at 336-777-1600, a couple of rules. Make it thoughtful and let's keep it civil because things can get out of control given how hot button of a subject this is. Nick Castellanos was asked who his favorite superhero was at the MLB All-Star Game over the weekend. And he said, Scooby-Doo. Then he got a bunch of pushback about that answer because they just moved it along. Oh, okay, that's your favorite superhero. Move it along. A lot of people saying, Scooby-Doo, not a superhero. And unlike, say, the university president at Northwestern, Castellanos was ready for this fight. He was ready to push back and handle some of the public backlash that was out there in response to his take. He stayed firm to his convictions. And here was his explanation for why Scooby-Doo is not just a superhero, but maybe among the best superheroes out there.
I mean, well, first off, he's a dog, right? And he can talk.
Fair enough. Okay.
And he saves, he solves mysteries. So I think that a dog that can talk and helps people by solving mysteries, I think is a superhero.
Every angle I wanted to attack this at can be easily diffused. I think my initial reaction might be yours. Scooby-Doo's not a superhero. But then the more and more I think about it. WD, do you have a favorite superhero?
Yeah, Spider-Man.
Mine's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And at the core of Batman, he's a detective. That's what he is. Like, it's almost like film noir, where it's like, he's a detective. He takes down bad guys and villains. And everybody agrees Batman is a superhero. Well, what's Scooby-Doo do? He solves mysteries. He is a detective in his own right.
But he doesn't have a Batmobile
yes, he does. They have the cave. It has mystery written right on it, the mystery machine. And he takes down villains. Why isn't Scooby-Doo a hero? Like, do you need to be able... He did say Scooby-Doo talks. That would be the only thing I'd push back on. Or it's like, oh yeah, first off, he's a talking dog. Does Scooby-Doo really talk, though? Like, he does say, Reggie! He says things like that, but does he really, like, speak in coherent sentences? That might be the only thing that I might push back.
Agree.
On the Scooby-Doo debate. But do you have to be able to speak in order to be a superhero? 336-777-1600. I'm really genuinely interested in what people have to think on this important issue.
I don't think you need to be able to speak to be a superhero. I don't think...
Then you have the Guardians of the Galaxy folks. Not like... Yeah. Is Groot a superhero?
Yeah, I'd call him a superhero.
Okay. How much talking's Groot doing?
I don't know.
Well, what's the one that doesn't speak and it's like a tree?
That's Groot.
Yeah.
Does he talk a lot? I don't know. I haven't really
seen it.
Talks
just as much as Scooby-Doo
I know
does.
He says, I'm Groot. Does he say anything else?
He talks as much as Scooby-Doo does, but we're probably going to say Groot's a superhero, I venture to say.
But isn't Groot, like, strong? Doesn't he have, like, super strength?
Okay.
Is he a tree? I don't know.
Okay. So you have to have super strength or something. Well, what's Batman's superhero? Being rich?
Kind of.
His superpower is that he's rich.
Got batarangs and he's got weapons.
Okay, then David Tepper, he's a superhero now because he's super rich and brings concerts to Charlotte.
You know, with concerts.
I don't think it works that way. I don't think. I mean,
I'm with him. I think he's right. Scooby-Doo is a superhero. If I'm wrong and Nick Castellanos is wrong, why? 336-777-1600. I want to take a hard left turn for a second. Getting to the Northwestern stuff from last night. Amid ugly hazing accusations over the last week, Northwestern decided to fire Pat Fitzgerald last night. But if you think that this is the end of the story, he's fired, now this story's finished, you are sorely mistaken. Because there's about to be a serious fallout, significant fallout that comes from this one decision. For one, Northwestern is a more coveted job than you might think it is. We've seen many of the reaction today. Oh, well, Northwestern, that's the best coach you've ever had. No one's going to want to take this job now. You're going to be irrelevant. This year, they might be pretty bad because they weren't really good last year. But that is thinking maybe of 5-10 years ago when the Power Five actually existed and it was a legit Power Five where there was, you know, balanced power or semi-balanced power across the country. Nowadays, everybody, it seems, is trying to get to one of these two conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten. And starting next year, the first year that they introduce whoever the next football coach is going to be, when that coach steps on the field, that will be the start of the Big Ten and its schools splitting a $1 billion television deal between their members, which gives them the ability to pay a coach what would be viewed in other conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12, money that you would pay if you were serious about football in the sense of like winning national championships. You can pay that type of money now at Northwestern, and here's the key, without the expectation that you're going to win a national championship. So you can get paid like you're supposed to win national championships without having to actually do so. This is the misconception that people have when talking about the best jobs in college football. A lot of people go to the SEC schools that win a ton, like Alabama. Oh, that's one of the best jobs in college football. Is it? Look at what happened to Coach Curry in the late 80s when he won two or three games in, I think, 1989 and got fired in his second or third year, right? Like, they were having a pretty good year. But at Alabama, if you lose two games in a season, it's a nuclear crisis we're talking about. Is that really one of the best jobs to take? Texas, very similarly to that. You know what's a really underrated job? One of the better jobs in college football? NC State. Hear me out, but Dave Doran is going into year 11 in Raleigh. Year 11. And he's won what? Hasn't even been to an ACC championship game, let alone won one. And is going to collect on more than $5 million this year. How many places in college football can pay you $5 million a year for you for over a decade, not even to get to your conference championship game? There aren't many places like that. Northwestern's like that, though. And they could pay more than NC State can because of this TV deal. It's a place like this, and this is probably going to get aggregated, but oh well. This was always the type of job that would concern me about Dave Clawson potentially leaving Wake Forest. I see some of them that are ridiculous. It's like an SEC job. I don't think Dave wants back in that environment after what happened to him at Tennessee, the one time he wasn't in a, air quote, smaller school, a mid-major or play or coaching at Wake Forest, or an FCS in that matter. I don't think he has much interest in that, and he's probably turned down many of those opportunities. But Northwestern has the academics. Northwestern is in the Midwest where he spent a lot of time. And Northwestern's in one of those two conferences. So this is one of the few schools that I'd look at and be fearful of them being interested in Dave Clawson, because I think Dave Clawson might give it some serious thought. Northwestern's a job that I think would be more coveted than you think. But getting into more of the fallout, the university president made the same mistake that Tennessee made with the John Curry fiasco a few years ago when he hired Greg Schiano. And that university president might face the same fate as John Curry, because in either case, they caved to public pressure. A football coach that will remain unnamed for this segment told me after that happened, when Greg Schiano had his offer rescinded and wasn't going to coach at Tennessee, when you empower the people behind their keyboard, welcome to hell. And that's what it seems this university president did. Because when that happened at Tennessee, they weren't going to let John Curry hire another guy because he just got there. He didn't build that equity yet. And this university president's pretty new. And this AD's pretty new, because Jim Phillips has only been the ACC's commissioner after leaving Northwestern for a few years now. By the way, he's probably got to answer some questions considering how long some of this stuff has been going on. What did he know about this? He should be asked that in a few weeks at ACC kickoff.
I have tremendous respect for Commissioner Phillips.
Yes, we do. But don't be surprised if the university president goes down, if the AD goes down, who hasn't been around all that long. And by the way, during this entire firestorm, was out on vacation. He just got back today, Adam Rittenberg of ESPN reported. I don't know, especially when you see the baseball stuff too. I don't think Pat Fitzgerald's going to be the final name to come down on the guillotine here. But if we're talking fallout again, Pat Fitzgerald, he's going to be okay in this equation, because the six-month-long investigation proved that he didn't know what happened, or at least couldn't prove that he knew what happened with the hazing stuff. And that's enough for him to get another job, given how good he was at Northwestern. He won at Northwestern. Took them to a Big Ten championship game just a few years ago. So he'll go to Alabama, be a consultant, or LSU, or one of those types of places, and he's going to get the bump of being a quality coach winning at Northwestern and get a better job than Northwestern if he wants one, even as early as next year. And on top of that, they can't fire him for cause, so that's probably going to be $30 million in his pocket as well. So Pat Fitzgerald, he's going to be okay.
There, it's going to be a great day.
Come on back up, kids.
On WSJS and WSJS.com.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Let's share with Hayes Permar what our theme is going to be this week. For skips or plays with Hayes, WD told us earlier it's all-star themed with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game being tonight. Does that mean it's got something to do with Seattle?
Like, what it does. We're going to do like artists about and just from Seattle. So there you go.
I thought we were going to get Smash Mouth.
I'm very excited for this. I actually, that's a really good theme. That's a deep well of options that you can go to, and I'm sure you're probably not going to feature any of the artists that you should, but we'll figure that out a little bit later on. Hayes Permar, I actually have another game cooked up for you, because when you had a radio show every day, you had a segment that I liked called Rightly Rated, where you would figure out if something over the weekend coming up was properly rated, overrated, underrated, rightly rated, right? These types of things. So this week, summer topics, things that are going on, had me thinking about overrated sporting events. And I'm just going to throw a couple things at you, and you tell me which of the two is more overrated. You think you can do that?
Yeah, so it's not just an overrated, underrated, or rightly rated on one item. It's one versus another. Which one's more overrated?
Correct. And we'll start with two that are going head-to-head tonight. See the Hornets face the Portland Trailblazers in Summer League. You got the MLB All-Star Game. All-Star Game or NBA Summer League? What's more overrated?
Ooh. I think it might be Summer League. All-Star Game has some legit history. Maybe some hope that the pendulum will swing on All-Star Games in general in professional sports and we'll care about them again. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a dreamer. But Summer League seems to like, the only thing we really like about Summer League is that, like, basketball's back because it's happening during the summer and sports have been done, and then all of a sudden it feels like it's back in the form of Summer League. And I think that Summer League is more overrated. It rarely delivers.
Yeah, and one of the things that just is the worst with Summer League, you get 10 fouls if you're a player, so Victor Wembanyama had a bad game on Friday night. Why? Because Charlotte decided they were going to use all their fouls on Victor Wembanyama to make sure he couldn't have the best game that he could, which isn't really like the product you're going to see when the NBA season gets here. Next thing, NFL preseason games or Wimbledon?
NFL preseason games. I'm always taking exhibition versus real thing. Wimbledon, again, it's got some history and nostalgia, and I respect still playing on grass courts. I like there's not much like in sports the fact that one of the most major tournaments is played on a surface that like nobody plays on normally. So Wimbledon, it's got cool traditions to it. They're getting less stuffy on their uniform stuff. Again, exhibition sports are all overrated. So I'm going NFL preseason more overrated.
I made Jordan Gross's jaw actually drop when I reminded him that we are 15 days away from Panthers training camp starting. It's right around the corner. This one's just a fun one that's not really topical, but I just want to throw it at you. Big Ten basketball or Army-Navy game?
God, out of nowhere. Man, that is tough. The Army-Navy game is heavily overrated. And to anybody who thinks that's mean to the troops, the question is, like, why isn't Army versus Air Force a big deal, right? Come on. Like, that's the troops, too, and nobody gives it the pageantry. But, wait, what was the other one?
Big Ten basketball.
Big Ten basketball. Why? Nothing could be Big Ten basketball for being overrated. Win a title one time, Big Ten. You stink. Even by, like, you would think they would luck out just by the sheer size of their conference. that they would luck into an NCAA title like Virginia won that one year. But no, they can't win anything. Big Ten basketball, more overrated.
To quote Scott Van Pelt, who used to be an ACC guy and now roots for the Terps in the Big Ten, watching Big Ten basketball is like watching fat people get it on. So I'll just leave that there where it may, where it sits. I'll leave it there. Now let's get to Skip Sir plays with Hayes. This is what we call a hard left turn, like Gary Hahn and Tony Haynes style, where we're quickly grabbing the wheel and saying, hey, you know, let's go
to the sidelines. Tony Haynes.
Yeah.
Hayes Permar is somewhat of a Renaissance man, an expert in the finer things. But he hangs his hat on music.
Loves his God, and he's no friend of Satan.
He was like 06, getting busy with his sticks, been watching Big Mike and Lil Trick.
And Trip.
I just need a Zion and someone he can dunk on.
Today, Hayes will decide if this music is smash or trash, glows or blows. It's time for Skips or Plays with Hayes.
It really was a hard left turn. We're kind of...
That's right, we ain't playing around.
Yeah, but... Anytime a dead fish is thrown into the studio and we need to transition out of something awkward for whatever reason, it is good having that Gary Hahn clip.
Is that the Josh Graham, the drive of Josh Graham's answer to, and here's a Castellanos for the high fly ball to left field.
Let's go to the sidelines,
Tony Haynes.
That's the local. That's the North Carolina, state of North Carolina version of the fly ball. That's also Brent Musburger. I don't even want to explain all the clips that we have here. Okay. What's the first? I think Hayes just figured out what that was from.
Yeah, I know that one is. I know. This would be a great game to play of, like, what moment that, like, this seems like a mostly throwaway comment. However, it actually came at a moment of high significance. So you're not getting, like, Vern Lundquist. Have you ever in your life, you know, you're getting, let's go down to Vern. I mean, let's go down to Tony Haynes. But for those who know, you know exactly what the reference is to. Yeah. I feel like we need to come up with more of these great, you know, understated moments in play-by-play history.
I think Brent Musburger. We have a ton of those today. There's Brent Musburger when he ogles it at Catherine Webb. WD didn't know about that. We introduced that to him. Whoa. And here was we gave away little Uzi Vert tickets. In fact, end of this segment, we'll try to give away another pair. Kevin Harlan gave us one of the best drops ever reading a promo.
Based in Philly, baby. I love this single, Money Longer. Money Longer. Little Uzi Vert.
We really do need to do something with this. What's the first song that you have, though? We're getting sidetracked.
That's right. So we're going to go with some...
Hey, wait, I got a question. I got to ask.
Yeah.
Since you're giving away Little Uzi Vert tickets, does it count that I've seen Little Uzi Vert in concert if it was like two songs at Dreamville Festival?
Yes.
If somebody says, have you seen Little Uzi Vert in concert, can I say yes?
Yes, because you see him in concert.
Okay,
but,
good enough.
But if the framing of the question is, did you see a Lil Uzi Vert concert?
Concert? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Good to know.
I don't think Lil Uzi Vert's from Seattle. So what do we have?
Starting with Nirvana. It's a classic. Come As You Are.
I hope I'm not stepping on anything else, but I'm happy you went Nirvana and not Foo Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was pegging that you'd be that guy that would choose Foo Fighters over Nirvana.
Probably would. But I went the other way today.
This album came out, I believe, when I was in sixth grade. And it was a force like none other. One of my favorite things about this album is the liner notes just had one line from each song, but it was always like a random line. It wasn't like the most famous line or the line that stuck in your head or the line of the chorus. And so, like, listening to the songs as a sixth grader, it was always this, you read all the liner notes and then you would be listening to songs and then all of a sudden you'd hear one and you'd be like, oh yeah, that's the one from the liner notes. That's one of my sixth grade memories of this. But Smells Like Teen Spirit was like nothing else when it launched. And this is, of course, a play.
Hayes Permar.
The second Seattle-based skips or plays with Hey song is?
A personal favorite of mine. It's from Pearl Jam. It is Even Flow.
We might have gotten it wrong. I thought that your look is very Patrick Swayze inspired. It might actually be very Pearl Jam inspired. You look like you could be part of the band.
Some dropped when I was in fifth grade. Like, I didn't know it at the time. You know, like, and when I'm sitting there in fifth and sixth grade, I'm listening to the Beatles and being like, oh man, that's when like rock was cool. And then I'm like, you know, recording Pearl Jam songs off the radio. But to me, it's almost just like pop because it's playing the same thing. I didn't really understand rock and roll, you know? And then as you get a little bit older with a little more depth of knowledge, you're like, whoa, I kind of grew up in the era of Pearl Jam or Nirvana. That's a pretty decent set of rock and roll chops right there. But this is a play. Great album.
Hey, Spermar.
Pearl Jam is one of those bands where, like, I feel like I wish they had only made like five albums. I don't even know how many they are right now, but their first three albums, or if you count this album as their first one.
You wish they pulled a Billy Joel and just said, you know what, I'm not going to top what I've done.
Yeah, I don't need any more fresh stuff. And obviously I don't really want that. Like, people that, you know, are artists or want to write and evolve or whatever, but I would have just been fine with the first three Pearl Jam albums run out over and over and over again at every concert. And just give me a live version of it. Maybe every now and then they drop a cover of some other song or whatever, but that's all we get for Pearl Jam is three unbelievable albums and then walk off.
I've never been a huge Pearl Jam guy just because of what they influenced afterwards. And it's just this sound that Eddie Vedder makes with his throat. Like, that's just every act.
Is that what is that what Creed and Nickelback and all them were chasing?
Correct.
Like, interesting. I never thought of it like that.
Like, it's just that sound.
A classic example of like him on Saturday Night Live. Like, I can, you know, and I don't know what the kids would say about Saturday Night Live today, about whether or not that's still a big deal for a musician to perform there. But like, you know, again, I feel like, you know, I knew what it was to look at teenagers seeing seeing the Beatles play Ed Sullivan, and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool, but you know, that doesn't really happen today. And then now I think back and I'm like, I remember sitting there just being blown away by Pearl Jam on Saturday Night Live and be like, that is a performance right there.
What is the last one? Are we going to go three for three?
I think so. There was no way Purple Haze was not going to make this list.
Jimi Hendrix is from Seattle.
Purple Haze, Permar.
Huh.
I mean, we're obviously playing that funky music. This is one of those songs that I go through every now and then where, like, you hear it and your ears start to tune it out because you hear it so many times. You hear it at ECU Stadium. It's
you do.
It's almost like a soundtrack of life song.
They
not
come out onto the field, Haze, with Purple Smoke. It's as good as it gets. And a guy named Steve, who's a pirate. Steve the pirate is the one walking them out.
You can take this song for granted. You can be like, all right, it's that song they play at the beginning again. And but then every now and then you wake up out of the days of just letting the song blow by you and you sit and listen to it again. And you're like, this is unbelievable. Like, this dude just oozed rock and roll from his fingers. It's like he didn't even know how to play guitar. He was like the emperor unleashing lightning bolts. Hendrix just like unleashed lightning bolts on the guitar. So it's not like he knew how to play the guitar. He just like existed and made the guitar make noise. It was like that. It looked that natural. And you just listen to him and you're like, this is like him dancing with his guitar, not really even like playing music. It's unbelievable how natural he sounds. And it made for, you know, a great branding opportunity for me at Halloween when I used to take off all my clothes, paint myself entirely purple, and then call myself Purple Haze for Halloween.
There it is.
Haze Permar.
Excellent. We have one more piece of sound to play for you before we let you go. Nick Castellanos, he has taken a ton of crap over the last few days, not because of anything related to Tom Brenneman, but because he was asked who his favorite superhero was, and he said it was Scooby-Doo. And then he justified it by saying this.
I mean, well, first off, he's a dog, right? And he can talk.
It's fair enough. Okay.
And he saves, he solves mysteries. So I think that a dog that can talk and helps people by saving, by solving mysteries, I think is a superhero.
I think I agree with him.
Yeah, no, I'll go superhero. I mean, doesn't Scooby-Doo have the, like, they don't overemphasize his heroic qualities, but don't we see him, like, run super fast sometimes? Like, his yeah. legs spin like wheels. Like, we don't talk enough about his super abilities. You know, he'll jump. Sometimes he'll float in the air following a smell. Like, that's how good it could be. Like, I think he's got superhero qualities. And obviously, again, as he mentioned, he saves the day and he's a talking dog. And as an owner of two Great Danes, I fully sign off on Scooby-Doo being a superhero.
Great stuff. Permar, we'll talk to you next week.
Well, see you, boys.